listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, live, live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, February 12th. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, good evening, Michael. Happy to be here on this snowy moon. It's a full moon tonight, you know.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Yes, I don't know if I'd call it a snowy moon down here. It's 72 degrees right now.
The snow moon.
Well, I'm glad to see this snowy moon as well as everybody in our live chat. We always appreciate catching up with you. We appreciate your feedback. And thanks to those that catch up with us in the archives. And we do get your emails and your feedback there as well. We appreciate it. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. As always, we're going to begin with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence.
We have a special guest tonight.
I'm sorry, I just sneezed about 6 times in a row.
I was wondering. I thought maybe
what happened.
Yourself. It was powerful.
We have a special guest tonight. We have Dr. Rick Telesca with
welcome,
us.
Welcome, Dr. Rick Telesca. And my body was in such anticipation over this discussion that and a sneezing fit. But I'm really looking forward to this conversation. You know, welcome. You had emailed me a couple of weeks back about this wonderful idea of talking about how AI is going to intersect with human health. And, take it away.
Thanks, Dr. Vicki. Thanks, Dr. Mike. It's great to be back here again. Yes, it is snowing in Connecticut. I don't know if you're where I am, but if Dr. Kevin is where I am, but it is snowing already here.
I know talking about that in the live chat here for those in the archives who wonder what we're talking about.
The artificial intelligence thing, I found it interesting. I snuck through and I was listening to the news a couple of weeks ago, and I'm not supposed to do that. They usually police me pretty well and don't let me listen to the news. But I was listening to the announcement of the new AI-based Stargate project, $500 billion to, explore AI. Well, actually, they're talking about AGI, artificial general intelligence. We're not talking about, the Snapchat stuff, the iterative stuff. And one thing they were talking about is how they were going to try and apply it to medicine. And this was really exciting. This is exciting because I believe this type of technology, which is so powerful, can actually do this. The $500 billion would just get us started. They're already starting to build these facilities. But one thing that they were talking about was, for example, the possibility with cancer treatments, that with this technology, someone could go to the doctor and get diagnosed with some form of cancer, and then take a blood test or whatever, and this information fed into an AI-based system. And 2 or 3 days later, the AI would spit out a vaccine.
What?
And that's absolutely incredible. Could that happen? Oh, absolutely, it could. I mean, they're already starting to work with certain types of vaccines. I know that. But It just takes time. But when you consider the power that would be available, especially through AGI, which is basically super intelligence, that's amazing. But, of course, the other side of the coin there is we can do that with cancer, for example. We might be able to do that with diabetes. We might be able to do that with heart disease. And people are going to live longer.
Mm-hmm.
And what are we going to do with them? Well, the thing that I thought of, because I'm old, is the 1976 film and, of course, the novel Logan's Run. And I don't know how many people are familiar with Logan's Run, but it's a story and a film that was set in the year 2274 where citizens are forced to undergo what they call a lethal ritual, which is actually euthanasia, at the age of 30 to maintain population control. Could we possibly run into that scenario? And here, how would this all be handled? I mean, this is a really significant question. I mean, ethically... all different ways. I mean, you have the possibility of, you know, maybe that's drastic in terms of the euthanasia, but would you have a situation possibly where as people get older, certain treatments could be withheld from them?
No.
I mean, that does happen today to a certain
extent. It does,
extent.
Exactly my thought.
That. All right. So where do we go with that? Who makes that decision, and is that a possibility?
You know, I've been thinking about this topic and this discussion and even the Logan's Run line. You know, I've been thinking about how in the developed world, you know, the population growth has really kind of ground to a halt. And frankly, I think it makes sense. And I think it's a natural response to longer lifespans. It seems like, you know, as a nation develops, as the life expectancy grows older and older, the, you know, birth rate goes down. I know that leads to a lot of things, you know, women's empowerment, you know, careers and different things like that. And of course, you know, when you have an aging population, that is a stressor on the workforce. You know, look at China. There's got to be a way to balance it out. But I think that as we as a species continue to grow into longer life expectancies, either through AI or other medical innovation, it seems to me that the cycle of humanity, you know, our life cycles, what we go through is changing. For example, the idea of adolescence is somewhat of a recent thought. You know, you were basically, you know, if you're a teenager, you're darn near growing up, you know, there is no adolescence. You're a child and then you're working.
Hmm. What do you think, Rick?
Well, yeah, there's just so many possibilities here. Yeah, I like the comment about the adolescence. So often I hear, you know, we don't let children be children anymore. We're just moving on, and that's just what happens. Now, there's so many options here possibly, and maybe the population won't grow, maybe it will. Will we move out into the stars? Will that be possible? Will that force us to move out into the stars? Can we move out into the stars? Right now, the biggest issue is the human biome. It just won't go. I can see people starting to make these decisions and saying, well, we need to do this or we need to do that. You know, the biggest issues we have in the world usually is over some type of territory. And as you start to spread out, I think we could run into this. I think we could have – somebody could start having that discussion. Maybe somebody's having that discussion today. I'm sorry, go ahead, Dr. Mike.
I was just going to say, I think a recent example of some population control that is viewed as by most as drastic, at least in the West, as drastic is China's one-child policy. You know, this idea of a need for population control and how it butts up against personal and individual freedoms and the personal choices that people can have to have a bigger family or not, right? And I think that is kind of, you know, if AI is going to lead us to these remarkable advances in human longevity, you know, how are we going to protect individual freedoms while at the same time understanding that we have relatively finite resources and space and et cetera.
Uh-huh. I think if I can inject here, I think we have to consider who can afford this and who's going to be allowed to get access to AI assistance, because we have universal health care here in Canada, but that's backed up. the U.S. has to pay for it. Millions, tens of millions can't afford that. And so I think the population control will take care of itself, because you can't afford health care, you're going to die anyway. So I think, to me, the like when you think about economically, population control will take care of itself. So yeah, that's, you know, my thought on it.
You know, and it may. Is what you just said, though, Dr. Vick, is very interesting, because late President Carter was diagnosed with brain cancer how many years ago? I don't even remember. All right. And when he was diagnosed by brain cancer, I heard amongst people I know that work in the, within the government, whatever, is that, don't worry, he's going to get special treatments. Mm. And he lasted longer than anyone could have imagined he would have lasted with brain cancer.
I don't doubt it.
And when he passed away, they did discuss it. You had to listen, but you heard a couple of people talking about the special treatments that he received. And a lot of people are trying to find out, were they special treatments that nobody else gets? Were they experimental treatments that somebody might get, but you have to spend the money? Mm-hmm. But the issue is, and we've heard it so many times, is there's a lot of stuff out there that people can't afford today.
Mm-hmm.
And the question becomes, and I've heard this question so many times, is there more money in the treatment, or is there more money in the cure?
Well, what I find exciting about the AI in medicine, and this is me, you know, in the here now, is there's so much gaslighting when it comes to medicine, you know, with patients, with what doctors say are phantom diseases, but they really are in pain. Whereas you put the information into an AI computer, it can spit out a diagnosis right away. Where, you know, it's a big relief to who's suffering, because it took, you know, 5-10 years to get diagnosed with something with all that misery, when doctors say, yeah, here, take an aspirin. You know, so that's, to me, the upside of AI in medicine. And when it comes to surgery, I know that, you know, from what I have learned about it, it's going to be very helpful. Microscopic surgery and helping out doctors. But when it comes to what y'all are talking about, I think it's selective. It's going to absolutely be selective.
Well, if I could just throw one point in, if we're talking about AI in terms of, you know, computing technology, you know, it. Computers and things like that are one of those things in life that really have become continuously cheaper, cheaper and cheaper and cheaper over time. I mean, we have computers and everything now, and artificial intelligence is one of those things. Now, what was it? DeepSeek made some rumbles because a Chinese venture capitalist firm, a billionaire, he funded this relatively cheap AI, only cost a few million as opposed to what's being used in the West. Now, caveat, they did use things like ChatGPT and things to train it, so they kind of did that little shortcut, but it's, you know, censorship aside, it's an effective model at a cheaper rate. And I do think that right now, you know, most everybody has access to some form of AI without paying a cost. And to me, AI could be one of those things that, like, antibiotics are incredibly cheap. Even in the US of A, where we do, you know, pay for everything, they're still incredibly cheap. It could get to that point where AI is so abundant that this kind of AI diagnosis is incredibly cheap. You know, these industrial revolutions and technological revolutions, you know, you can point to a capitalist motivation, but they still revolutionize things. They still change the way things are just by their nature.
I think we're still a long way off from that, though, Michael.
Well, yeah, but I mean, what are we talking
here and there?
We talking 10 years, 20, you know?
Well, I don't know. What do you think, Rick?
They were saying 10 years, and I think it could be faster. Here's the thing we do have to think about, though, is AI presents a solution or gives you a solution. You now have to build it,
right?
Okay? And how do you deliver that solution? So now we're talking about stuff like nanotechnology.
Oh,
just like what you were saying, like surgery. Surgery may not be done from the outside anymore. It may be done from the inside. Okay, we already have nanobots that can do some amazing things. All right, you know, DARPA is working with all kinds of stuff that allow them to trace and to know stuff before, let's say, a soldier is injured. So we're going to be looking at things like nanotechnology to actually make this happen. And that has to be developed. But all this stuff is moving so incredibly fast that we have to, you know, it's going to be interesting to know if it really works. I mean, because you get some of that going on, too. We're going to try this. Well, I don't want to try it unless we know, you know, it's going on. I'm not putting a nanobot inside me and let it do something until we know what it's going to do.
I know the science fiction version of nanobites, but explain what nanotechnology is.
Nanotechnology, I mean, I don't want to say quantum level because it's still bigger than that. But think of you know, a quantum level surgeon. I mean, this technology can be teeny, teeny, super tiny atom-sized robots that go in and they do something. All right, and they can do almost anything. They've used them in engineering within machines to repair a machine from the inside. And that's just some of the very beginning, and it's kind of rough. But we're talking about nanotechnology that acts within your body. It can be programmed. It can be directed from outside the body. It can actually do the surgery. And we're getting to the point where this is so science fiction that it's hard to even imagine. But it's real. It's going to happen. And it's going to be, you know, I don't know. You're going to feel like, is there something crawling around inside me? It's not like that. I mean, this is the type of stuff. We have neural dust, for example. This is something that was developed by the Defense Department. It's neural dust. Somebody can inhale it. It gets into the brain. It can actually allow human-machine interaction. So the machine now can tell what's going on in the brain, can tell if the brain is injured, that type of thing. And if you go to the DARPA webpage, Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, you can read about neural dust. And this is just the beginning. So we're going to be looking at stuff out there that, you know, the question is, do we want, again, just because we can do it, do we want to do it?
Mm-hmm.
So Dr. Mike has mentioned in the chat, gold nanoparticles
yep.
are used in cancer treatment to selectively destroy tumor cells with heat.
Yep.
What do you know about that?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. They can do them with heat. The other thing that they could do with the gold is tumor cells are denser than the rest of the area around the body. So when you shine, I don't know if you say shine, if you fire a laser through the body, the idea is for the heat to collect, for example, in a tumor, all right, and then destroy that tumor. And because the tumor is denser than the rest of the material around it, okay, it heats up. Gold, from what I understand, actually helps increase that heating capability because of the gold, and it destroys a tumor.
Which is different than radiation.
Which is different than radiation. Now, okay. Somebody's going to say, oh, isn't a laser radiation? Of course it is. That's what it is. But it's a different type. It's light radiation. It's different than some of the other radiation that we use.
Well, I know a woman in southern BC who does a very rare form of laser therapy on animals and does extraordinary work in helping with especially spinal injury, where a mm-hmm. dog comes in, it can't walk. One treatment, the dog's walking.
Yeah.
I've had long conversations with her. I actually wrote a story about her a year or so ago, and she gets this equipment that she uses from Germany because the other stuff that she said, the best stuff, is not sold in North America. Well, I found that interesting. So I guess it poses a question then, too, and I'm not going to get into what country is further ahead. But if a country like Germany can have, you know, that kind of technology, what's going to be more available here and when? Like, are they holding it back?
Well, you know, that goes back to what I mentioned before, and I was involved in these discussions. Where's there more money, in the treatment or the mm-hmm. cure? Now, the insurance company would rather have a cure because they don't want to pay for the treatment.
Yeah.
The pharmaceuticals would rather have the treatment because they make more money, and this is all going to come out of pharmaceuticals. Now, you may have a different pharmaceuticals would be involved. They'll have a particular group that does this type of therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But you're gonna look at that. The other thing that I found interesting recently too was not exactly on this topic, but it is red light therapy. Mm. Years and years, people would say, "Oh, if you shine this red light or use this frequency of red light, it's going to help. It's going to help your skin. It's going to do this." And the medical community says, "No." And now all of a sudden, oh yes, we're going to use, instead of doing this to you. And I was reading the other day, somebody was actually using this, was it for a cancer? Something for some type of cancer, where the red light therapy worked as well as cutting it out. Mm. And so now the question is, did we know that? Did we not know that? Are people holding that back? So now we get into the world of AI and all this medicine, these treatments are available. It's like Dr. Mike said, who's going to get it? Are we all going to get it? Is some people going to get it? Who's going to get it first? Well, I think what I heard when they were talking about this $500 billion for AI is there's three big companies involved. But what they wanted to do, and this is always my belief, they want to see that some of this money gets down to those garage operations. You got these kids out there that have done things over the years that nobody could say could be done. Apple in their garages. And for a period of time now, all this money went to these big companies, big corporations. Well, you know what? Shine a little down on these people and watch and see what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just happy to do it. And when they do it, they tell the world it's done.
Right.
And I think a lot can be done that way. You'd be surprised what kids come up with. You hear them out there saying, because they have no problem saying, what if? Oh, everybody says it can't be done. Well, try it. Let's see what happens. You know, turn the computer off. Turn it back on again. How many times have we heard that?
You know, I'm thinking about, there's so many great topics going around. We have a lot of stuff going on in chat, and my mind's going in a bunch of different places. You know, I still think that, you know, this idea of, can the big industries withhold technology and science from the masses because they want to prolong their profit margins? And when you have so much competitive research going on, it's only a matter of time before it gets out there. And like, again, there are a lot of cures out there. Antibiotics is revolutionary. That alone expanded human life, extended human lifespans. So they can maybe temporarily, delay some things, but, it's only a matter of time. Is that decades? I don't know. The other thing that keeps coming to mind is trust. You know, we're talking about nano surgeries and nanobots. In the chat earlier, Damien, you had mentioned talking about nanomachines and different things like that. They'll tell you it's safe and effective, and if you resist, you'll be labeled a conspiracy theorist. I get it. Because, for me, mRNA vaccines were very interesting. You know, it didn't bother me. I found it very provocative, the idea that this could be used to quickly treat a whole slew of different things. But at the same time, I don't want to put a chip inside my body. I don't want Neuralink. It's so, what do you trust? And, I'm not going to tell anybody what the right thing is because I don't think I know. I just know what my gut tells me, right? But, the idea of, technology in my brain, it almost is like an invasion of my privacy. I want that wall up. I want to be able to keep what's in my brain. I don't want anybody else to, see it unless I choose to share it.
I don't think that's not new. I mean, I heard it from the elders and, with a lot of the indigenous people I know. They talked about this 30, 40 years ago, that when they started chipping animals, they said, they're just going to, they're slowly going to say, we're going to chip humans to make sure, the dementia people don't get lost, but everybody will be chipped one day.
Mm-hmm.
And that they knew that before any of these discussions were had publicly.
Well, I've been listening. I think Dr. Rick, I'd probably agree that, this kind of stuff's been in the ether for a long time. I mean, look at sci-fi. You have all kinds of examples of biotechnology. Yeah.
So Dr. Mike has also added in the chat, nanobots are tiny robotic devices that could travel in the bloodstream to detect and repair damaged cells. I just think we're in Star Trek.
it starts to sound that way. And when we talk about chip, people typically think about it. Oh, a chip. We're talking about something so tiny. So absolutely tiny. And then Then let's add in the capability that AI will have, be able to work with quantum theory and quantum physics and quantum mechanics. And now it gets smaller and smaller. Mm-hmm. But something Dr. Mike mentioned that is worth thinking about is the mRNA technology. And that's one of the real focuses. They want to use mRNA. They want to use AI to work with mRNA. And mRNA can be a potentially dangerous thing to play with. Mm-hmm. We're getting very, very close to playing with the actual building blocks of life here.
In the DNA structure.
CRISPR.
Well, and that's it. And what happens is the mRNA, what it does with these vaccines is it makes an entry in the DNA strand. I forgot if it's a protein or an enzyme. And that – or I think it's – one creates the other. Okay, I don't know that much about it, but I know one creates the other. And then the mRNA that created that goes away. All right? A Swedish study, which, you know, you hear about, and then all of a sudden it disappears. Nobody ever hears about it again, said that in some people, the mRNA never left the DNA structure. It stayed there, which means it could change the DNA. All right? Interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, if that happens accidentally, well, you know, these things do when we play these games. You know, we got to be careful. Or could somebody use it to make a change? And now we're going to go to all those stories that can't possibly be true. All right? The stories of extraterrestrial life. Mm-hmm. And the stories that people say, like the big brain bang and whatever, is it possible they could have manipulated DNA? Well, we're going to do it, and we're lucky we can get to the moon. Oh, I'm sorry. We can't get back to the moon. We could do it. And then, of course, the stories that I've heard for so many years and stories and whatever is people talk about, does extraterrestrial life exist? Okay, most people are going to say, yeah, it does, and I agree. And has it been here? And I'm going to say, yeah, it has. I think it has. But the stories that you hear is the reason it came here, because it needed to. It couldn't stay where it was. It didn't have enough room. It damaged its environment, so on and so forth. Are we just following that same path? I mean, everything we're talking about here, you realize 20 years ago, I'd say 20 years ago, you talked about this, you would be completely nuts. We can't do that type of stuff. That's never going to happen. And now it can.
Mm-hmm.
CRISPR. Okay, Damien mentioned, and Dr. Mike mentioned CRISPR. CRISPR is getting better all the time, the gene editing tool.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about CRISPR, I don't know, maybe Dr. Mike, you've heard the stories, how very wealthy people can use CRISPR if they want their children to have blue eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that a few months ago. I mean, why would I do that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, Damien had kind of picked up on a point you were making about eugenics earlier. And to me, CRISPR, that's just eugenics. I mean, it's with a couple different steps. You know, instead of... you know, planned out genealogies like the, I can't remember what they're called in Dune. Ah, it's going to bug me now, but the Bene Gesserit. But, you know, it's this idea of, you know, if you're wealthy, you can have a designer child. And then what happens?
I know a couple that just did that.
And then what happens when we force these people to watch old episodes of Star Trek where, you know, Khan Noonien Singh tries to take over the world and gets kicked out into space and then fights Kirk? You know, it's going to be messy, but...
yeah, it's actually in some way kind of mortifying to me. I mean, yeah. I have clients that I've known her for many years. She couldn't have her own children or produce her own embryos, but they found someone, a woman, used her husband's sperm, and very selective right down to this one is a girl and this next one is a boy. And, I mean, how could you possibly do that?
You know? Right.
But they did it.
Well, and isn't this also something that we've been trying to do for a long, long time? You know, I've heard old wives' tales about if you do this position or if you have sex in this, you know, period of time, then you're going to have a boy or a girl or et cetera, you know? But...
Well, lots of wives' tales about that, but this is...
The interesting thing about some of this is when you can't do it, it's really great. This is something we have to do. But when you can do it, now you're sitting here saying, all right, should we do it?
Right.
And Yeah, my children are designer children the way they are. Believe me, they're each one of a kind. There's not going to be anything else like that anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
I don't know if that was good or bad for one of them, but anyway, I think when we now can do it, we have to be really careful. Who's going to make that decision? You know, I'm not going to, you know, you say an elected official. Well, you know, most elections are popularity contests. All right. If I listen to some of these people, I don't care what side they're on. I say, why would you do something like that? My wife says, stop listening to them. Or I listen to something that I happen to know something about and they say, and I say, that's completely wrong. I hope they don't really believe that. But they might make a decision and then you get a whole bunch of people who are afraid to say, oh, no, wait a minute. I don't know that's a good idea. And then we go down this rabbit hole, and by the time we get to the other end and realize maybe we shouldn't have done this, it's too late.
Well, I think that's where human beings are notorious for not caring too much about the outcome.
Well,
it's like, oh, make a mistake later, or like you barrel into it, and there we go. I want to say here, though, Dr. Mike has written in the chat, he said, here's the biology in him coming out. CRISPR is derived from a natural defense system in bacteria, which use it to cut the DNA of the invading viruses. Scientists have adapted this mechanism for gene editing in other organisms. He said, adds here, in 2023, which is not long ago, a CRISPR-based therapy for sickle cell disease was approved, curing patients by correcting their faulty hemoglobin genes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's fantastic.
Isn't that amazing? Well, you know, the other thing, though, is, you know, like in Jurassic Park, nature will always find a way, or life will always find a way. But, and I've heard this story before, is that the world we live in, and I'm going to say this world, Earth, is a living entity.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. We don't seem to think it is, but it's a living entity. And if we don't do the right thing, it's going to correct it for us.
Absolutely.
Right? If we continue to destroy an environment, let's say, or we do certain things, the Earth eventually is going to correct it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to really care about us. Or maybe it's because we don't belong here. I don't know. But it's going to find a way to correct things. So if we possibly play in the wrong areas and we do the wrong things, I think we're going to see some correction.
You know.
Well, what was that I watched the other day? I know it's an old movie, but it's The Day the Earth Stood Still with Keanu Reeves. And people should check it out if you want to. But the whole point of an extraterrestrial species monitoring Earth, and you know, we were given a chance, and the whole thing was to look, you know, this is the most vital planet in the universe, all this potential, and the only disease here are humans.
I've heard that so many times.
Yeah.
And the people ask me all the time, if you were to give, I have a list of 10 movies that most represent what I believe is the most reality in terms of extraterrestrial life. And one of them, and it may be one of the first ones, is The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah.
And the interesting about The Day the Earth Stood Still is they could care less what we do to ourselves.
No.
They just don't want us moving out into space. All right? We don't want you bringing your ideas or your violence or whatever out into space. What you do amongst yourself is fine.
Yeah, they don't want the...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
They don't want those toxic vibes. But
they don't want them out there. And the interesting thing is, and this hit me the other day, and of course, weird things hit me all the time. Two things. I got to do the two things. The first thing is, I'm writing down solar system here. The first thing is the way our bodies are created in the human biome. The biggest problem they're having right now getting to Mars is maintaining control of the human biome. Our bacteria, which makes up most of us, goes crazy in space in a weightless environment. It starts to grow out of control. So unless we can create artificial gravity or some type of form of that, getting to Mars is going to be next to impossible, not because the technology can't get us there, but our bodies will not survive the trip. We can't control them.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, I got to put a couple thing. I just got to put a couple things out. These ideas are just bubbling up. First off, Dr. Rick, when you brought up Jurassic Park, that was exactly what I was going to bring about, too. I was just waiting for Dr. Vicky, and I was going to actually reference Malcolm, the character Malcolm. You know, he had that famous line from Jurassic Park. You know, you spent so much time figuring out if you could, you didn't think about whether or not you should. And so darn relevant here. Also, Dr. Vicky, I'm glad I'm not the only one that caught this. Damien and Dr. Mike, another. You threw out that old movie, When the Earth Stands Still, and you said the Keanu Reeves one. I was like, it goes way back. It's like, yeah, 1951. Thank you, Damien. Love those points. But it absolutely is kind of one of those things where technology is so capable of good or evil or destructive or constructive. Nuclear weapons. You can have nuclear power. You can have atomic bombs. And I'm going to say this last thing, and I'll move out of the way here. And, you know, it is... I actually lost my train of thought. I got stuck on the nuclear thing.
What were you going to say, Rick?
I don't know. I forgot. No, I was talking about the 1951 version of The Day the Earth Stood Still with Michael Rennie, actually. The other thing I was going to say is I was sitting there the other day. I don't know what I was doing. I must have been doing something. But I was thinking of where we're placed within our solar system. Is it possible that our planet is where it is and the rest of the solar system is a buffer zone, so we really can't get out of here or into the galaxy? I don't know why it hit me that way. It's like, well, I want to keep something away from me. I'm going to create a buffer zone. And we can't get out. We're not going to go to the sun. We're smart enough not to do that. But if we try to go the other way, then we have the asteroid belt.
Yeah.
If that doesn't get us, you know, we're going to keep going. I don't know. That just kind of hit me that way.
Isn't that exterior kind of circle of asteroids that goes around the entire solar system, isn't that the Oort belt, or am I misremembering?
There's also the Oort cloud. The Oort
cloud,
belt,
yeah.
Or the Oort cloud. And that's where they have the – or Pluto is like a mini planet. What do they call that? Can't think of the name of it. There's more than one. There's like Pluto. No, there is an asteroid belt which is in farther, and then there's the Oort cloud, and that's where all those mini planets are. And there's many of them. And when we say mini, some of them are as large as Earth. Excuse me. Now, I noticed a couple of things in here. The moral reason to do things, and that's the fear. Because if you can think of all the good that I can do with AI, how much bad can I do?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can get to the point with AI where I can look at a person's gene and determine who they are or what they are. And I could program something to say, everybody that has that gene, I want them gone. And then introduce somehow that tool.
Well, I think that's the difference of having a global mandate for humanity versus these little power structures and who wants control. So the people who want control don't care about the side effects. So that's all there is to it.
Well, but I think you're getting that in science, too, and we talked about this before, where scientists used to have some concern for the ethics of how their discoveries will be used. I mean, we talked about that with the atomic bomb. They were talking about we don't want you to use it. We want you could demonstrate it, okay, but we don't want it to be used. Well, you don't see that so much anymore. The scientists put their head down. They all want to create something, and they'll say this. They'll say how it's used is for somebody else to decide. When it's used is for somebody else to decide. I don't know. I don't know that's the right thing. I still really believe that people are more alike than they think. I think we all want the same thing. We want safety for ourselves and healthiness for ourselves and our children. So that's what we all want. We just want everybody to kind of get along. But for some reason, I mean, I guess we're told we're not. We don't care about all that stuff. Or somebody's told, well, Mr. A over there doesn't really believe that. He doesn't like, you know, Mr. C. And when you get tools this powerful, so powerful we can't even imagine it, you know, you can't even imagine the possibilities of what could be done. Star Trek, you know, you got to look at that. And what was the one with the actor, Gideon's something, where he decided to destroy an entire planet because of disease? Gideon's something. Somebody's going to come up with it. Somebody made that decision. He was the governor of the planet and made that decision.
I don't remember the original series as well.
But that's are you talking about in the first Star Trek?
Yeah, this is the original series. Yeah. Gideon something. It was there. There was something here I just read.
That's okay. I do remember because I was a kid when all the first Star Treks were coming out, and I was mesmerized. Damien just said the Mark of Gideon.
Good on you.
Now,
go ahead.
Now, Damien said something interesting, and we've had this discussion before, that AI should be sentient, which, you know, it's probably going to happen. But Dr. Mike brought this point up when we were talking about that. Who is going to teach AI its morals?
I know.
Where is AI going to get its morals?
Whoever has the most money.
That could be a concern.
But if AI is truly sentient, then you can grow beyond your programming. We all saw it happen to Data in Star Trek, and so we know that it's possible. But really, though, I'm beyond jokes. If AI is going to be truly sentient, not sentient, I'm not going there yet, sentient, then it would have the ability to grow beyond its original teachings, just like every person can. How many people are in this community of the curious that were raised to believe a certain thing, got out there, realized it didn't apply, and changed their mind, changed their programming? For AI to truly be self-aware, it has to be able to change its own programming.
Now, and I think that's an interesting point, because when people change their programming, why? Because the previous programming didn't suit them. It didn't meet their needs.
Yep.
Okay. So if AI becomes sentient and something occurs, there was just an article the other day how when they tried it, they were doing a test when they tried to turn AI off, it spoofed them and wouldn't let them turn it off or shut it down because it didn't want to die.
Mm-hmm.
Not die wasn't the term, but whatever. So will AI begin to look out what is in its best interest or what's in our best interest?
I would think that if you can get to a certain level of intelligence, and now we're just getting into, you know, hypothesis with any kind of AI or biological or any entity, if you get smart enough, I think that you look at, well, what's kind of good for everything in balance, right? I think that you have human beings that can get to that level of awareness.
Only a humanitarian thinks that way.
Well, exactly, but it's possible. And I would argue that a humanitarian, somebody who has that level of ethics, generally is more intelligent than a person who is very primal, who is very nature-based, where it's, what is this going to do for me, right? It's the advancement of the species or the self. And I would think if machine intelligence really does rapidly advance, like we know computers can, and they do surpass us in intelligence, may they surpass us in ethics as well. I'm thinking, you know, another pop culture reference would be Vision in this case from the Marvel movies, but I digress.
I'm pessimistic about that, and only because the people who have the money are the ones in control to build the AI.
But they can only do it for so long.
There's not much for ethics there. people with a humanitarian point of view would consider that, but they're not the ones in control. And Dr. Mike just wrote in the chat, survival of the fittest, I guess, and whoever has the most money wins.
But again, if it is truly self-aware, then it would have to, by definition, grow beyond the control of the people who created it.
And it would have no need for humans.
And now we're just getting into that kind of thing. Well, I don't think you believe that machine life can be alive, but here is one thing that I find very interesting. I think one of the essential questions about life itself is, why does life want to be alive in the first place? What drives cells to reproduce? Why do animals and plant life want to be here? You know, what is that driving force? And the fact that, Dr. Rick, you just touched on the idea that an AI program didn't want to be shut off. It wants to be here. It seemingly has that drive of life.
Well, can't we equate that with the human body? Like, mentally you want to die, but the body's saying, sorry, like I'm not dying yet. I mean, isn't it much the same?
Well, you know, it might be. I'm going to make one other quote. Everybody's telling me it's the Mark of Gideon, and it aired in 1969. Correct. I've got another one for you out there, so you can check on me because of something Dr. Mike just said. Do you remember the episode with the M5 computer that took over the Enterprise? And it was supposed to control the Enterprise. It was a battle computer, and they were in a war game. And it started to destroy the other starships for real, and when they tried to unplug it, it wouldn't let them unplug it. You also had that in Colossus, the Corbin Project, which I think was a movie in the 80s. It did not want to die either. You can look that up if you want. So I guess we had a lot of these stories. But here's something I wanted to mention, something that Dr. Mike said. He's always giving me ideas here. I don't know if that's a good thing. As AI goes forward, will it force us to create a new new definition of what being alive means?
Mm.
All mm-hmm. right, and how does consciousness fit in there?
You
because
know,
I think being alive includes consciousness.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to agree with Damien in our chat, who said that AI needs to be sentient, which I take AI needs to have rights. If you create something that is truly self-aware and you don't give it autonomy and the ability to choose its fate, is that not a slave? And, you know, at what point does AI vote? You know, I mean, that's a bit of an extreme, but, you know, these discussions are going to happen eventually.
We hope they're going to happen. We're having them now, so that's a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I think AI is going to get – I mean, I don't know if I told the story before, but back in 1995, myself and a couple others, we were tasked with for a company – trying to predict what the technology is going to be doing for us. We already had computers that could program themselves. Some of it had to be touched up a little bit. But we said that the time is going to come when there's going to be technology out there where you don't need to be an architect or you don't need to be this or that. You're going to have a computer program that will do it for you. Look about creating – look what AI is doing now. Create music and create art. People tell it what it wants. And I think as the future comes on, like we're seeing in the chat room, everybody's going to have some AI, but somebody's going to have a little bit better. That's always going to be mm-hmm. the case. I mean, the other thing that has to happen here that we're not really, you know, all this sounds interesting. We're still not dealing with the resources that will be necessary to actually create this type of technology. All right, our brain is absolutely amazing. The amount of knowledge we can store. I mean, we're talking about, you know, buildings and 1,000 acres of buildings to store this type of information because AI can't store it. Okay? It doesn't have a brain like we do. It has to have all these places to store that information. And of course, artificial general intelligence could just go right after it. But it can't store it the way we do. Now, there are some things, you know, on the horizon, like Superman memory crystals and stuff like that can store data right in the light crystal. But we've got a ways to go before we can do that. So that may slow us down a little bit.
So as I understand it, with the announcement of $500 billion to build a blah, blah thing, the energy that it takes for that is enormous.
Yeah. And fresh water, too.
That, too. Then China comes out with DeepSeek. Now, I understand DeepSeek is an open AI, meaning you can build on it. But when the U.S. wouldn't give China certain minerals, they took a different route.
Data chips.
Exactly. So they just took a different route and built it cheaper. And, of course, now there's speculation about what that means. Did they really? Because, you know, governments don't like each other. But I think that what you're saying, Rick, is what we have today, but we don't know what we don't know, and exactly. that there could be way more advanced. Like, you know, when I started using a computer, you had to have a machine half the size of your living room. And now it's in a tiny box. So, I mean, is that not possible to, you know, build AI in just one complex? It's just a small one square block, everything you need.
Well, quantum computing would suggest that you can.
Right.
And the thing with China is, based on my experience, I don't know if they really did it. I mean, they had talked one time of that they were using quantum entanglement to communicate with satellites.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. These are some very crafty people. I also know that just about every aircraft they have in their Air Force looks just like ours. I guess that's just the way it happens, right? I mean, it's like everybody in the world building pyramids, even though they've never talked to each other. I'm not going there yet that they've done this, but we do have some things coming out. Like I was reading the other day that fusion power may just be a few steps away now.
Right.
When it was say it couldn't be done, now it can be done. That's a tremendous amount of power.
Yeah.
But we're going to need all that. I just, it's like you said, Dr. Vicky. I mean, when I started on a machine called IBM 36030. It had to be in a room, a fairly large room, and we used the heat that came off it to heat the building.
Yeah.
We'd run the pipes through there and it would heat the building. And now the average cell phone is probably 20, 30 times more powerful than that thing would ever be.
Exactly. And that's in a very short period of time. And I guess all things being relative, because, this is the last 30 years. You know, we've really only had the internet for 25 years.
Early 90s, 35 years, 45 years.
Which is kind of interesting how much this has sped up in a very short period of time. We went from absolutely saying there's no way that man could fly to within, how many years being on the moon and now launching stuff all throughout the solar system. So, one question is, how does it move that fast? I mean, if you're into computers or you worked with computers, I mean, we went from simple switches to ion gates. We're now using DNA, storing data within DNA strands. It's moving very, very fast. And the problem with that is sometimes we don't think about what we're doing when it's moving this fast. I mean, who thought building an open-air nuclear reactor was a good idea?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And yet somebody did it, and they didn't think about what could possibly happen if things went wrong.
But there's still lots of them.
Yeah.
What's that?
Well, they're not open-air ones like Chernobyl was.
Right.
They're different. And I have a friend who works in that. He was at MIT, and he was on the original Voyager team. And now he does stuff with nuclear power. And he tells me absolutely positively a nuclear reactor can be designed that really would never be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, but they're moving so fast towards fusion, people may not want to build them. But a lot of countries have a lot of nuclear reactors, you're right. Mm-hmm.
And
I think that what we have to consider is economics, because they're not going to let us know what's available until we can spend money on them. But they're already 10 steps ahead. So how is we keep spending money on what they want us to buy until they think we're also ready, because
we talking like global works. Illuminati style they or
no I'm talking it's kind of like the pharmaceuticals really don't want you to get better. It's people who build cars or people who build computers,
right?
How can I make the most money? Whether it's Apple or Samsung, right. It doesn't matter. Well, how can I make the most money? I know I have all this technology, but I'm going to give a little out at a time. So I'm not going to say Illuminati. I'm not going to say any of that. I'm just...
I truly I truly think there is definitely an element to that in our society. But Dr. Rick, you pointed out earlier the competition. You're basically the butting heads of the financial motivations of the insurance industry butting up against the financial incentives of the pharmaceutical industry. And I think that competition, it's not always perfect, but a lot of times it can kind of prevent stagnation.
Well, it can. And we also had the issue, and we talked about this before, is the lack of disruptive innovation. People who write papers and in schools and colleges, they're not paid to go against the grain. They get money when they go along. And we need more of that disruptive innovation. And there's two things you just mentioned I'm thinking about. One is a doctor friend of mine. I've played hockey with him for years and years, so I kind of trust him. And he was telling me one time how the numbers or the scale for diabetes or pre-diabetic, a few years ago, maybe this was more than a few, maybe it was 10 or 15 years, they suddenly switched them. It was something like the number was 10, and now they switched it to 6. Why did they do that? I said, is it pharmaceutical? And he just kind of rolls his eyes at me. Well, I didn't get an answer. Well, that was kind of an answer. Okay, so if it's true, I want it to be done. If it's because we want to make more money, I'm not so sure. All right. Another thing is radon. I've had to deal with radon and studied radon and things for years.
Yeah.
And here in the States, we have a 4 picocurie limit. Okay. It shouldn't be above 4. But in other countries, it's 10 and 11. Mm-hmm. And we were up there at one point, and suddenly we've dropped it down. And then we hear how it's one of the biggest causes of lung cancer in the United States. It's the second largest cause after what? Smoking. Then you ask for the numbers. We're talking where smoking is something ridiculous like 100,000 cases a year to radon, which is now 4,000 cases. Okay, yeah, it's the second leading cause, but there's something about that. The other thing about the radon numbers were, and I asked this to a scientist at UConn. I said, if people have been living in houses the way we're doing it now for so long, and radon is so dangerous at this level or whatever, then how come we don't have more cases of cancer from radon?
Actually, up here we do. If you live in the mountains, anywhere you build a house, you're likely to have radon.
Right, and we have it here too. But we don't see as many. They're just telling. I'm asking, how come there aren't more sick people? And he says, I don't know. They just aren't. And then I was told, well, you know, more people are likely to get sick from the chemicals coming off your carpeting, your furniture, and the way the furniture was put together. So I guess my only point that I'm getting to is this another level that somebody set, an artificial level, to sell something? I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know.
I agree with you. I think it's, coffee's good for you, then it's not good for you. You get old enough, you see the cycle go around and around and around. Mm-hmm. Breastfeeding is in, breastfeeding's out. Well, I don't know how we survive on this planet for hundreds of thousands of years. These fads and trends.
You know, when it comes to those kind of things, I got to say, what has been the equivalent of clickbait news forever? You had the tabloids, then you had, local nightly news that needed to jazz things up. They grab a study, they take it out of context, and they make very unfounded claims based on one study, and they don't even talk about, well, what was the sample? What was the control? What were all the different, what is this even trying to say? But, I think you're absolutely right. We're going to get through this. And one of the points that I was trying to think of earlier but didn't is that with any technology, earlier when I lost my train of thought, is with any technology, we are going to stumble. We're going to make mistakes. And people will almost certainly die because of them, and that is tragic. It almost seems unavoidable. But I do have faith, and I'm going to say I don't have faith in a lot. I try not to believe in anything. I hope in a lot, but, I'm scared of belief. But I do have faith that we will have some kind of better future. I just don't know if it's going to be decades or centuries or millennia. But
I wonder, and I think along the lines of what Rick has been saying, I knew a biophysicist 25 some years ago, was doing research into breast cancer. And it was her final paper. She had isolated a protein that would determine whether or not chemo would work for you. Hmm. And they pulled her funding. Because chemo is big business. So if you had a, particular protein in your body, which she found was easy enough to test for, that protein is going to eat the chemo. Chemo won't work for you. Hmm. So, you know, yeah, there goes a whole thing.
But, you know, my dad worked for General Motors for 45 years. And I remember him telling me when they were talking about silicone, we're talking about, he said, if they would give you quarts of silicone to put into your engine instead of oil, he goes, the engine would last forever.
Yeah.
He said, because there's no byproducts. It doesn't burn. There's no acids that it creates. He was also telling me, he goes, and this is, we're back in the 70s. He goes, we could create a carburetor tomorrow that would give you 50 miles to the gallon.
Sure. Mm-hmm. There's
all that stuff.
Sure. I have a science friend of mine. It's, you know, thankfully, for the grace of age, too, you meet a lot of really cool people along the way. And there's a plant in northern Alberta that produces oxygen. And that plant, for as long as it's been around, has actually heated and powered itself on hydrogen. Huh. And it has electricity as a backup, but it's never used it. So if you can power that, he said all you need is like a cup of hydrogen to put in your car. Probably, yeah, it's dangerous, but ain't no more dangerous than propane, gasoline, anything else that you use. And you can go for hundreds of miles, you know, one cup. Mm-hmm. But go ahead.
I'm sorry. I still believe that everything we need to survive here exists within nature. We just got to look for it.
Oh, sure.
I agree.
Sure.
Yeah. Mind you, what we're creating now is not necessarily natural, is it? Would you consider computers natural, except that you're using some minerals from the earth to build compounds?
Well, I'm just going to throw my opinion on here real quick, and Dr. Rick, I welcome yours as well, but is a beehive natural? It's a constructed thing. Is a city natural? Yes. Human beings are part of nature, you know. All kinds of animals and bacteria and things, they take that raw materials and they turn it into something else. And we do the same thing, but that's my take.
We self-destruct.
Well, yeah, I think we do. I think we do self-destruct. We don't know what's going on around us. I saw, you know, Audra mentioned my cancer was caused by environmental factors. I believe that 100%. I have friends who actually worked at this base in Nevada where they had burn pits, and they got sick from what was burned from those pits.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no question about that. We keep doing this to ourselves, and that's not right. You know, nobody deserves that, and it's just not right. I guess if I would say one last thing, try and be upbeat on this, is there is a movie called Sleeper by Woody Allen. I don't know how many people even know about it. But he was put into a deep freeze, and when he awoke, he found out that all the things that he had learned in the past weren't true, and in fact, the most healthy thing for you were hot fudge sundaes.
I like that.
Well, I think it's, I know we've gone over the hour, but, you know, these, you see how one subject can bleed into all kinds, because mm-hmm. it has all these ramifications, and we continue to educate ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the point of having these discussions. And Rick, you're a wealth of information. I know maybe Michael and I talk too much that we don't allow you to say too much, but we appreciate you. Is there anything else that you would like to add when it comes to AI and medicine before we close tonight?
I just think that, you know, we all have to be, we can't be afraid. You know, my wife was a nurse. She'll say, always question your doctor. But I think we can't be afraid to say if we see something we don't think is right, if it's being used the wrong way, or we can't be afraid to say, yeah, we like that just because somebody else said they don't like it. And when I read something like I read from Audra, that her cancer is caused by environmental factors. It actually makes me angry. I mean, it makes me angry. That shouldn't happen. We shouldn't be doing those things. And I just think we have to think. When we hear these things, let's just not go with them and say, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's think about it for a minute. Mm-hmm. And what's the downside here? Okay?
Yeah, I agree.
It keeps coming back to just because we can doesn't mean we should.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Dr. Malcolm.
I would like to have you back to talk further about AI and extraterrestrials and hybrids and all those other possibilities of what we could be creating. So if that's cool with you.
Well, I always love doing this because you guys stimulate so much stuff. I had some interesting discussions with people over the last few days in Washington. I wasn't in Washington, but they were. I saw the discussion from Dr. Stephen Greer. He still thinks somebody's going to tell us something. I disagree. I spoke to him about that. I completely disagree. I explained why. But I do think we're going to see some very interesting stuff. And it's going to be the same type of stuff we always get from the government, whatever, is you got to pay attention to what they're not saying, not
yes.
to what they say.
Mm.
Okay? Very carefully. So we might be able to have some really interesting discussion. I've been prodding my guys, but they've been really tight-lipped lately. I don't know what's going on with them. So.
Well,
one of them's getting ready to retire. He doesn't want to lose his retirement.
Oh, well, there it is. Well, we're definitely going to coordinate with you. We're going to get you back on. I love these conversations. And, you know, time has flied. This has been a great discussion. So thank you very much, Dr. Rick. Thank you very much, Dr. Vicky. Dr. Vicky, I know what you want to say.
Don't let them push you around, folks.
There it is. All right. Thank you, everybody. We'll coordinate with you, Dr. Rick. We'll find a good time. Not sure if that's, you know, I don't know how quickly that's going to be. We'll talk with you, you know, behind the scenes on it. And either which way, we're looking forward to seeing everybody next week. And until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.